From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Dublin.
I live in the Richmond District, San Francisco.
Ingleside, San Francisco.
I'm from West Portland.
East Oakland.
Coming up, singing telegrams.
My name is Brunhilda. My name is Brunhilda.
We'll meet a local family that's been performing them in costume for more than 30 years.
We would come in as a food, a singing chocolate chip cookie or a banana or something like that.
And we'll hear from ham bone artist extraordinaire, Unique Derrick.
I just like to use my hands and my thighs and chest to go bada-bing, bada-da, bada-boop, and use my mouth and throw in a funny duck sneeze or something.
Clap, clap. Today on Cross Currents. One of the perks of having a radio show is that sometimes you get really great listener phone calls. Listener Heather Fife got in touch after listening to the podcast The Specialist, which began here at KLW, and she told producer Casey Miner about her parents, who performed singing telegrams for 33 years and who had Heather and her four siblings perform them too. Here's The Specialist.
I listened to your show. I love your show. And then, I don't know, I was just listening to it a month ago, and all of a sudden it occurred to me, oh, my parents, I should tell her about my parents.
My name is Brunhilda. My name is Brunhilda. My name is Brunhilda. And I'm here for Claudio.
I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist. So when I did a really unscientific poll before starting this story, the way most people reacted to hearing the phrase singing telegram was to be like, is that still a thing? Singing telegrams started back in the 30s when regular telegrams were still popular as a fast, cheap way to send important messages: births, deaths, wars, stock market crashes. The less serious singing variety was an additional service. The first person to sing one was a Western Union operator named Lucille Lips, really, who sang Happy Birthday to actor and singer Rudy Valley. But I'm here to tell you that the type of singing telegram you're probably imagining, you know, where a stranger in a costume shows up at your door and sings to you, that kind of singing telegram is alive and well in 2016. The woman you just heard performing a Viking princess routine for an unsuspecting office worker is Robin Fife.
My name is Robin Sands Fife.
She and her husband Duncan.
My name is Duncan Fife. That's my stage name. It's also my real name.
Run the Bay Area company All-Star Showgrams. In addition to singing telegrams, they also perform at children's parties, corporate events, hospitals, even at the occasional funeral. And let's just get this out of the way right now. No stripping. These are 100% wholesome, as befits a family business. Robin and Duncan have five children, including Ashley.
My name is Ashley Fife, and I'm actually third. There's five of us.
And her younger sister, Heather.
My name is Heather, and I am the daughter of Robin and Duncan Fife.
I met the Fifes because Heather listens to the show and got in touch to tell me that she and her siblings were performing at parties from the time they were kids, for money and on call. This was awesome, by the way. You should all get in touch and tell me these kinds of stories, which confirm my unshakable belief that there are specialists everywhere. Anyway, like all family businesses, Heather said there was no escaping this one.
You know, parents would pick us up from school still in their costume. And, like, my dad, he would be like a sheep, and he'd come with paint all over his face.
When I did these things, I used to be terribly embarrassed.
This is Heather's dad, Duncan.
I used to have to go through my mind this process of reassuring myself and conveying the idea that it's perfectly natural and normal to have a man come in dressed as a ninja turtle or a sheep or whatever.
He and Robin say it was really normal to have multiple gigs a day and at all hours. There just wasn't always enough time to change clothes.
We would come in as a food, a singing chocolate chip cookie or a banana or something like that.
So being in the costumes while living daily life just became normal.
This is the story that I was going to tell you.
Here's Heather's sister, Ashley.
When I was 11, my sister and I went to a camp over the summer where we had to take public transportation.
On the way home the first day, they got to talking to the girl sitting next to them.
We were basically at the end of the bus stops. And she was too, and I said, wait, where do you live? And she said, I live on such and such street, which was really close to us where we were living. And I said, oh, that's so funny. We live on Roberta Drive. And she looked at us and said, do you live next to the clowns? And I stopped and I looked at Heather, and she remembers this moment too. And then I looked back at her and I said, oh, we are the clowns.
This is one of the places where we keep all our costumes.
Oh my God.
Grandchildren go crazy when they see that.
Yeah, two-year-olds just hyperventilate.
Mascot heads, children's characters, a lot of velvet and tulle. Bins labeled things like gorilla and two chicken bodies.
And then we also have all sorts of dresses and suits, and we have like 70s leisure suits and suits from the 1880s and Dickens hats and all sorts of bunny costumes and Santa Claus costumes. I kind of like think to myself, oh my gosh, if we ever decided to close down the business or move or something like that, it's just a horrendous job.
How many years worth of costumes are in here?
Well, we've been in business for 34 years, so we started collecting them 34 years ago.
Running the business is the Fife's full-time job. They raised 5 kids on this work and employ a bunch of local performers to do shows. A show usually costs $200 or $250. Robin says that reflects the high cost of living in the Bay Area.
And that's really quite a bit of money, and I understand that. However, the way to look at it, and people who have seen us know this, is that you can pay a lot more than that for your food. And a year later, nobody remembers the food. They always remember the performance.
Do you have to have a good singing voice to do this job?
That's a bone of contention between us. I'm a musician. I'm a singer. You know, Duncan just, in my opinion, does not sing that well, but he loves singing. So that you know, he sells it.
Mm-hmm. Duncan, would you care to respond?
Yes, I will. I knew three or four songs that I sang that they seemed to be very good. But the thing that drove her crazy, I did a song, I was Cupid, and I did Burst Forth, a crowd of about 25 or 30 people. Let me say I love you, let me. And as I did it, they responded and loved it, and they wanted an encore. I did an encore for them. They called her the next morning and said, that Cupid was a fabulous voice. And I thought Robin was going to throw me out. I was
Can I rebut by singing?
Let
me say I love you. Let me show I care. That's the way it's supposed to be done.
We're just a normal family that does singing telegrams. Do you know what I mean? They love performing and theater unabashedly. They're not just clowns.
It runs in the family. Ashley's grandfather, Robin's dad, was the magician George Sands. Growing up, Robin did tricks and ventriloquism. Later on, she studied classical music and opera. Duncan studied theater, too. Before she started doing singing telegrams, Robin was working as a secretary, not exactly her life's calling.
The only way I could get through the day was pretending that I was in a movie where I was portraying a secretary. And so I would pretend every time I would say, come and say it to the boss, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. So-and-so is on the phone. I would pretend I was in a movie, you know, and so that was the way I would get through the day. I was really a fantastic actress.
She and Duncan were at a retreat in the late 70s when they got the idea to do singing telegrams. They describe it as a human potential course, the kind of place where you were supposed to spend a few days figuring out your life's purpose.
And somebody decided to hire a singing telegram who came in a little, you know, little cute little outfit and sang a song for the guy who was running the whole event. And the entire audience of 300 people stood up and gave her a standing ovation. I turned around to Duncan and I said, I could do that.
At their busiest, Robin and her performers do dozens of shows a week, sometimes back to back. Queen Elizabeth at one place, a Viking princess at the next, and lots of Santas around Christmas. Both the Fifes and their kids said to me, doing this well takes work. And you don't even have to be a performer to appreciate that. Here's Heather again.
I'm a high school teacher now. And when I get observed or something like that, I get nervous, or, you know, if I know that, like, a principal's going to come in, I can't imagine what other people who didn't grow up being forced to just go into parties and entertain people must feel like if I feel nervous when I get observed. You know what I mean? Because I had, like, serious training of being, like, just walk into any situation and just figure it out. I'm really good at interviews, like, dates, all that stuff.
Ashley Fife actually did grow up to be a performer. She was a Rockette for a while and toured with Broadway shows before changing careers to become a therapist. And she said no audition was ever as stressful for her as going into a kid's birthday party.
There's so many skills that I learned because of my mom just sort of being like, go. Not just kind of a showbiz mom, but like kind of no nonsense. Like, all these children are counting on you. Get out there. My fears and my worries and my considerations or my doubts or all my insecurities, she didn't have time for that.
Hi there.
Hi.
You look great.
We're a little early, so she's not answering the phone, so I have to get the...
The Viking Princess is a takeoff on the Brunhilde character in the German opera The Ring Cycle, which I'll admit I've never seen, but Robin's long red velvet gown and Viking helmet with blonde braids give me an idea of what's coming. Our target is a woman named Claudia Vega. Today is her last day at work.
And she specifically told me she doesn't want any big send-off. So I said, okay, I won't do anything.
That's Delisa Ramsey, Claudia's supervisor. She comes out to meet us and we sneak inside. It's a pretty regular office, fluorescent lights, cubicle partitions. But the way it's set up, there's really nowhere for Robin to hide. So she just goes right in singing, Viking spear waving.
My name is Brunhilde. My name is Brunhilde. My name is Brunhilde. And I'm here for Claudia. So, Claudia, this is your last day, yeah?
You,
Claudia, you think it's all over, don't you? Do you think it's all over?
I hope so.
Well, it's not over till I sing.
All of Claudia's colleagues are gathered around laughing and taking video. The show goes on for about 10 minutes, and honestly, Claudia takes it really well. For example, even though it's like 11:30 in the morning, Robin gives her a celebratory beer to drink and says she's going to sing until she gets through it.
If you don't finish it, you're going to have a dead Viking. That was amazing. You know, you're the first chump to open the can in the first place.
Everything's headed towards the big finish, Claudia's personalized song.
All right, now this is a very famous aria from a famous opera. Are you cultured?
A little bit.
You just chugged a bud. Yeah.
There's this whole thing where the Viking princess is actually a New Yorker, so Robin's got a couple of accents going on here.
All right, here goes. I have stepped into this goodbye gathering with a message from some folks who said, well, tell her good luck in the future. So in case you're wondering what the hell I'm doing here, dressed up like this, it's 'cause I've come to say, goodbye, we'll miss you. Hope your future's really great. Hope you're more successful in boot camp and your diet without us putting cookies in front of your face. Claudia, we wish you all the best. So we hired this Viking princess to sing this song to tell you that we think you're swell. And also we hope that you'll continue to be the kind of person who takes a singing Viking gal so well. Good luck in the future. Let's all sing it loud and clear. Good luck in the future. That was not so good.
Thank you, Jay.
It's extremely important among all things that the audience enjoy your performance and that you're doing it for them.
One more time. Let's sing it so she won't forget with gusto. Good luck in the future. Bravo.
Like, I recognize that it's crazy. Not crazy in a bad way, but I recognize my parents are like vaudevillian performers. They're totally vaudeville. But, you know, they love it. It's made them happy. They've made money off of it.
This is Heather again. She says of all the kids, she's the one who's the black sheep.
I think I've wanted to be normal so bad all my life. They know that. They already know that. I mean, I was definitely, like, very angry with them. But also, like, I don't think I would have it any other way, the way we grew up.
That story was engineered by Seth Samuel, who also wrote all the music you heard that wasn't operatic Viking singing. To hear more episodes of The Specialist, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, or just head on over to kalw.org/subscribe. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Hambone is a kind of body percussion with roots in West African music and dance, brought over to this continent by enslaved people. Today, East Bay native Lance McGee keeps the practice going. McGee performs his signature blend of clowning, hambone, and physical comedy under the name Unique Derique. KALW's Jen Chien spoke with him about the roots of his art.
I read that you started clowning when you were 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. I think it even goes back further than that. I think I was born into having a sense of play. It's just that when I was 15, I realized that, you know. But I come from a lineage of family performers. My grandfather was a songwriter and tap dancer and actually wrote Great Balls of Fire that Jerry Lee Lewis sang.
Your grandfather wrote that?
My grandfather wrote Great Balls of Fire.
That's amazing.
I know, right? And then my mother studied dancing and African dance, so I was influenced by a lot of that. And then I found my way as a teenager.
And you grew up here in the East
Bay,
right?
Yeah, in Berkeley. I started clowning and when I was 15 and loved it and loved juggling, and I learned to do hambone, and it just thrived with me and it felt right. And when I was 18, I joined the Pickle Family Circus here in San Francisco and learned a lot. And then I was influenced by other clowns that came through the Pickle Family Circus. And they were my idols and clown idols. Yes, I had clown idols other than Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton.
You mentioned that you are a hambonist. How do you say that?
Hambone, you're a body percussionist.
Yeah. So yeah. Tell me about that and how you learned that, because that's not necessarily a typical clown skill that people have, or even necessarily that you would relate with clowning.
Absolutely. Well, before I learned hambone, I used to play the drums. And so the rhythm, I'm all about the rhythm. And one day in Berkeley, when I was 15, I saw these kids in my neighborhood jamming on hambone and just playing their bodies and creating all these beautiful rhythms. They taught me how to do it, and I never stopped. And then later, when I was in college, I learned from my godmother, who's an African-American dance historian and has her doctorate. And she told me about the history of hambone, how enslaved Africans were not allowed to play drums because, for several reasons, they could communicate with the drum. And so European colonizers who didn't allow enslaved Africans to play those drums, they went back to the body. So throughout the Americas, there's this form of body percussion. But in America, in North America, the term and name became hambone, slapping the sides of your thighs, playing your chest, hitting your body and letting it do the rest. And so I learned about that history, and that always stayed with me as something significant and important, that as a clown and physical comedian, that I'm also sharing and performing something that has deep and rich history in America.
I was wondering if you could do a little demonstration.
Oh, I'd be glad to. Okay, so hambone, hambone, where you been? Around the world and back again. Hambone, hambone, have you heard? Mom's gonna buy you a mockingbird. Hambone. And now throwing a little hand jack. Thank you.
I'm speaking with Prince Among Clowns, Unique Derique, who also happens to be a licensed drama therapist and counselor named Lance McGee.
Hmm.
So one thing that is unusual about you in the clown world is that you are a Black person. And I'm wondering what kind of difference that might have made to you in your sort of clown career, and especially as someone who wants to bring something like Hambone to highlight that in your performance. Yeah.
Thank you so much for that question. Yeah, when I was growing up and training as a clown, seeing how, you know, traditional clowns in the circus wear white makeup and create an image, I didn't really gravitate to that. I really watched a lot of Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. I saw that they were being funny in ways and telling stories through their body with a context story. And I gravitated more to that. And at the same time, when I was learning about the history of Hambone, I got my bachelor's degree at New College of California here in San Francisco through humanities. I did an independent study on circus arts and physical comedy while I was working with the Pickle Family Circus. Right, I'm 18, 19, 20, training and learning and writing papers about the work.
Excellent. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
So that's kind of unusual too, a clown going also
my whole
the
life is
academic route.
Unusual to unfoolsual. But one of my advisor said, you know, you're doing clown work, you're African-American male, it'd be important for you to learn about the history of blackface minstrels. And so I did a lot of research on Burt Williams, Williams and Walker, who were the first. Burt Williams was the first African-American to perform on Broadway during the Ziegfeld Follies. But he had to work in blackface. And the difference between blackface and clowning, when we put on the white mask, we don't think that we're making fun of white skin people being funny. But when we put on blackface, you know, that was a negative, dehumanizing culture, and it was designed to put down culture. So I learned about the difference between clowning and dehumanizing yourself. And it can be very, there's a gray area of like, how far do you go with clowning? Where are you making fun of your culture, or are you making fun with life? And so when I approach my material, I'm always thinking about how am I playing and making fun with life? You get to laugh through me of the foibles of life that we can relate to.
That's really fascinating to me in relation to something like Hambone or techniques that might come from a minstrel tradition. A lot of times we kind of want to ignore or pretend that that didn't happen, but that was a huge part of our American entertainment history. Yes. And so I'm wondering if there are times that you look at the different audiences that you're performing for and might maybe pitch your performance slightly differently. As you said, you don't want to be kind of making fun of or letting other people make fun of your own culture.
Sure, sure.
Which is our own culture
exactly.
as Americans.
Exactly. Well, you know, a lot of people don't have a reference point of minstrelsy and Hambone. And actually, Hambone goes back before minstrelsy. Mm-hmm. If you were African American in this country and you wanted to work, you could only put on the blackface and then you got on stage. So if you were a tap dancer, a singer, told jokes, did whatever.
That you had was to put on the avenue
for
you.
Exactly. But, you know, the thing I like about circus and physical comedy is that people love to be engaged in the oddness of a trick, a skill. Like, wow, how do you do that? And when you're playing Hambone and hitting your thighs and your chest and playing these rhythms, people are fascinated, like, wow, how do you do that? You know, so it's right up there with juggling and balancing things on my nose or chin. It's a skill. But then I find the humor in how to make it funny in my show. Another piece with that is because it's rhythm, we all connect to rhythm. And something about whether it's the heartbeat, you know, we got this constant motor humming. And no matter what type of music you like, your head's going to usually bop to the rhythm of it. And so when I'm doing Hambone, I think in a deep way, we're connecting to the rhythm that we can just feel, you know? And I think it's innate. It's in all of us. And we're all different drummers in some capacity. I just like to use my hands and my thighs and chest to go bit-a-bing, bit-a-da, bit-a-boom, and use my mouth and throw in a funny duck sneeze or something.
Hambone, Hambone, have you heard? Papa gonna buy me a mockingbird. If that mockingbird don't sing, Papa gonna buy me a diamond ring.
That was Lance McGee, a.k.a. Unique Derique, speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. Unique Derique performs during the Yerba Buena Gardens Festival on Friday. You can find all that information at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents.
Oh, Hambone! Hey, that's old.
tickets are now on sale for KALW's 75th anniversary concert featuring Kronos Quartet and Bruce Coburn. It's at 8 p.m. Thursday night, August 4th at the Norse Theater in San Francisco. We hope you'll join us for this celebration of music, creativity, and local public radio. Tickets and all the details are at KALW.org. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. We love to hear from you because we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Lisa Cantrell, Leela Day, Angela Johnston, Jurgen Klemm, Allison Levitsky, James Roland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Syra Trejo. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by award-winning East Bay musician Karen Armstrong. This Wednesday, she'll play at Strings, located on San Pablo in Oakland. Doors open at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
The Pontiac was green and white, built in 1955. His mama threw that car in overdrive and flew off into the Texas night. In the backseat, two young children listen to Hank Williams singing. The Midnight Train.